The scene is Chicago. It's spring of 1940. Buck Benny Rides Again, starring Jack Benny, is on the screen at the Chicago Theater. Gone with the Wind is having its first Chicago showing at both the Oriental and the Woods Theaters. At the Blackstone Theater, Lillian Gish is appearing in Life with Father. Tallulah Bankhead is starring in The Little Foxes at the Selwyn. Over at the Auditorium Theater, Laurence Olivier and Vivian Leigh appear in Romeo and Juliet. Clifton Webb is the man who came to dinner at the Harris. And audiences at the Erlanger Theater are cheering The Philadelphia Story, starring Katherine Hepburn, Van Heflin, Shirley Booth, and Joseph Cott. Now the scene changes. It's spring 1971. Joseph Cotton is back on stage in the Chicago area. And we've taken our Those Were the Days microphones backstage at the Drury Lane Theater, where Joseph Cotton is currently starring in The Marriage Go-Round. Welcome to Those Were the Days.
Thank you very much. I remember very warmly those days of the Philadelphia Story. I'd forgotten the theater. What you said was
the Erlanger Theater.
It was the first time I ever played in Chicago, and we had a happy 2 months here. It was beautiful weather all the time. I wondered why they called it the Windy City. I've been here, of course, several times since, and have found out that that's not entirely a poetic description, and it has some realism to it. This, actually, is the next time, is the... Yes, I haven't been on the stage, sadly enough, in Chicago since that appearance in the Philadelphia Story. And I'm very happy to be back here again.
Well, you're going to be here till the end of May, aren't you?
Yes.
Almost Memorial Day, I think.
We open tonight, and we'll be here for 8 weeks.
Great. Good chance for all of your fans in the Chicago area. Perhaps someone who may not have seen you since the Erlanger Theater get a chance to see you on the boards here at the Drury Lane.
Well, I hope they'll recognize me.
Oh, they'll recognize you. We've all followed your career from the Erlanger Theater right up to 1971. Now, before you became a big name in Hollywood, Joseph Cotton, you were very active in New York on the New York stage. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. I'd been in New York for 12 or 14 years before I went to California. We got back to the Philadelphia Story again. It was during our layoff in the summer when Katherine Hepburn went to the coast to make the movie. I went with my old friend Orson Welles into his first picture, which was called Citizen Kane. So while Katherine Hepburn was making the Philadelphia Story in Hollywood, I was working in my first movie with Orson in the Mercury Theater, Citizen Kane. And then, after we completed those pictures, Katherine, hers, and I finished my spin in Citizen Kane, we went back and went on tour with the same company that had played in New York, and then we subsequently came to
and that's
Chicago.
When you went to Chicago.
So actually, I suppose I had made my first movie
before I actually
came to Chicago, but I don't think the movie had come out by then.
No, it wasn't released, I don't think, until 1941.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'd like to back up just a little bit. When you were on Broadway, you were working with the Orson Welles Federal Theater and then into the Mercury Theater as well, right?
Yeah, in the Federal Theater, I worked with Orson and a lot of very talented people, John Houseman, Arlene Francis, and Paula Lawrence, and Virgil Thompson. All of us were in what was called Unit 891, and out of that group, many of that same group, and joined Orson the following year when he started the Mercury Theater.
And you were you a part of the Mercury Theater on the air then?
Indeed I was, but I know what you're going to ask me next, and I'm sorry to tell you I had nothing to do with that famous broadcast at all. I was in about every other one. I wrote some of them. Sadly, I didn't write that one, and I admit that I had none. I'm one of the few actors and radio actors from New York who admit he wasn't on that program, but I had nothing to do with it.
Everyone else said they were involved.
It was a very big cast.
Well, he did quite a number of broadcasts in the summer and the fall of 1938.
And yes, but it's pity that kind of radio doesn't exist today. I don't know what happened to it. I miss it because I figured out once that I'd been on more than 3,000 dramatic radio shows.
3,000?
Well, I got a good start with, uh-huh. with what we call soap operas. I did nearly 700 on one of those, so that's a pretty good start.
You mean just on one soap
on
opera?
On one series,
which,
yes.
Which series were you involved with?
It was a one with Martha Scott. It was called The Career of Alice Blair, and we made 600 and some, nearly 700 episodes.
Oh, my goodness. That was out of New York then?
Mm-hmm. Right. Uh-huh. Out of New York, and then when Martha went to California to be in a film, and then during the time mm-hmm. I was out there making Citizen Kane, we did some from out there, too. Mm-hmm. We recorded them out there.
You did, even after that, into the middle 40s, and later on, you were, of course, involved in the Lux Radio Theater broadcasts and the Academy Award and so on.
Yes, when all those big radio shows that were on, I loved doing them. I'm so sorry they went off. They still have good radio drama in England. You know, BBC has very good radio.
Australia, too, I think, has some
has
original drama.
Pity we lost.
Well, do you think we could do it today?
I don't think the stations would have it because they, well, I won't go into those reasons. You probably know them better than I do anyway.
But do you think the public would be ready, would be willing to sit and listen to half-hour dramas again?
Certainly.
Well, we concur. We agree with you that the public would listen to the good old programs again.
Well, I'll tell you what, they made some experiments out in California about 2 years ago, and, they took the... the best of Fred Allen shows and put them all together and the best of so-and-so show. This was experimented with comedy shows.
Uh-huh.
And the same sponsor who sponsored them those days sponsored them, and they got a very surprising rating.
Well, we have...
But darn good, too.
Yeah. We occasionally do play bits and pieces and excerpts of the old radio programs, and our listeners are very happy to hear them all again. So we know what you're talking about. It's great to hear these things.
I had a lot of records. We recently sold our old house out in California, and you know what you find in cupboards and cellars when you pack up. And I found about 200 or 300 old recordings of radio shows that I've been on.
No.
And there's a museum out there. Uh-huh. I found out about it, luckily, because I didn't know what to do with it. So I gave them to this radio museum in California.
Oh, great. No, I don't.
But if you want me to, I'll find out. And
I'd love to know. Yeah, we'd like to track that down. That would be
I'll
great.
I'll find that
out. All programs that you were on?
Yes, most of them were programs that I was on, that I had been on, and that had been recorded. Uh-huh. On old
the
discs.
The 16-inch discs and
some on smaller ones.
Wax.
Yeah.
The thick wax.
Yes, I don't know what the quality would be like today.
It'd be almost impossible to find equipment that would play that today because everything is diamond needle sensitivity.
Well, I think this place is re-recording it onto tape
and other kind of stuff. Well, I think it is mainly due to the collectors that we have any slice of radio from yesterday today.
Well, it's the only reason, the only reason we have a copy of that, of Orson's famous Martian one is because of some amateur who happened to be recording it that night, because in those days, CBS and NBC hated the word record, you know. We even used to do live two shows. We'd do one for the East and one for the West.
Mm-hmm.
So that it would be kept off of records.
Everything
tape hadn't
live,
been heard
right?
of, yes.
Oh, that's amazing. We're glad that you didn't throw those away. That's the big thing, that you gave them to someone maybe who will preserve them and share them with this generation.
I'm glad there is such a thing as a radio museum now.
Yeah. That's good. There's a Radio Historical Society, too, in Minnesota. They don't have a very large collection of the old programs, but they do a lot to remember the programs and write about the radio performers and things like that. With getting back to you and Orson Welles, and your film career really started when Orson apparently brought you to Hollywood.
Of course, that was the first picture any of us had ever made. There were very few people in that picture.
You were all stage actors and radio people by that time.
We were... And none of us knew what we were doing. Orson did, of course. Uh-huh. He'd been out there 2 years. studying his craft and trying to find the right picture to do. We were all innocents. Mm.
Maybe that was the
doesn't always work out that way, that it turns out that it's better if you don't know what you're doing. Uh-huh. But we had good guidance, I must say.
Well, you followed up with the Magnificent Ambersons in 1942, and that was directed by Orson Welles.
Right, and Orson did the adaptation of that, too.
Uh-huh. And then you continued, your career continued to be guided, if that's the right word, by Mr. Welles, Journey into Fear with Orson Welles.
Orson and I wrote that together.
You wrote that, too?
Yes.
Oh, did you do? You mentioned before.
I adapted it rather. It was a novel by adapted.
Oh. Now you also you had worked in three films with or for Orson Welles, and then you moved into a film by Alfred Hitchcock, Shadow of a Doubt, in 1943.
That's right.
Now, what is the... And that was with Teresa Wright in that, and you played her Uncle Charlie.
Yes, I was under contract to David Selznick by now, mm-hmm. and so was Hitchcock, and we were loaned out. Hitchcock and I were both loaned out to Universal for that picture.
Well, what about the... how was it... What were the differences in working with Welles and with Hitchcock?
Oh, I can't go into that. About directors' methods or actors' methods, I don't know anything about it at all. I'm not prepared to discuss it. I just don't know. They're both wonderful today. Certainly are two of the greatest directors in the world.
Mm-hmm. But they did have different techniques. Or didn't they?
I don't know what technique is. I think technique is something that an artist... acquires, and certainly something he shouldn't lean on too heavily.
Well, what you had done, you started said that was your first. You were at that time under contract to David O. Selznick, and you had a long association with David O. Selznick.
Yes, I did, long and happy.
Doing a number of films for him. I've heard a story about David O. Selznick that he would often grab up the script and hide himself away for a day or two and come back with almost a revised version of the whole thing. Is that a fact, or is that just a story?
Well, that is a fact, yes. But I think that's true not only about David but other people. And David was a hard worker, and he did have those 72-hour days that he had great energy.
You had you also made a number of films with Jennifer Jones.
Yes,
our
I did.
Listeners will recall Since You Went Away and Love Letters and Duel in the Sun, Portrait of Jenny. And then by that time we were up to 1950 and you were in The Third Man, again with Orson Welles.
Right.
Some great pictures.
Well, I was lucky enough to fall in some very good scripts. What a lot of people don't know about Portrait of Jenny, Shadow of a Doubt that you mentioned, the Hitchcock picture, was that it's the only movie script that our great playwright Thornton Wilder has ever written.
No, I didn't know that.
Well, most people don't, but Thornton Wilder wrote that. It was a pleasure to study it and not change any of his words either, because he's... pretty good writer, you know.
That's one of my favorite films of yours, too. I think it really was...
It's one of mine, and Mr. Hitchcock has said it's one of his favorites, too.
Good. Well, what's ahead for Joseph Cotten? Gee, did I see a notice in the newspaper the other day that said that you're involved in, I can't imagine, 20 horror films?
No, I can't imagine that either, but I hope it's true. Because I have... been in some. I was in one with Vincent Price last year. We met around Christmas time in London last year. I think it'll be opening here in May or June, called Dr. Fibes, Phibes. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll enjoy it. It is great style. We all enjoyed it. I came directly from Rome to Chicago after finishing a rather classic version of Dr. Frankenstein, which I played Dr. Frankenstein. And And I'll be, when I, the play closes here, I'm going to Munich to make another one of the pictures I prefer to call scare pictures instead of horror pictures. That's a horror picture. You know, if you say it wrong, it comes out as a horrible picture.
It's not a review of the film by any means.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we skipped completely from radio and movies to 1971, but you have made yourself well known to anyone who owns a television set. And well, you were involved in the Playhouse 90 things, weren't you?
And I was never in the Playhouse 90 things, but I was in the early days of television when we did live television. I think those days they called them spectaculars, those big hour and a half things. And they were terribly different, but we used to rehearse them like plays and do them. And in some respects, I think the shows were better than they are now, because there was a little more time to prepare. Then we did have to rehearse. Mm-hmm. Now we do it on film, and they're made on slow schedules. Schedules. And
piece by piece again.
There's nothing wrong with doing it piece by piece, but it's very difficult to do it on this fast schedule. Mm-hmm. It's amazing that they go as well as they do.
You were associated with some things that are very dear to the hearts of listeners to this program, because you narrated a few of those Hollywood stars.
I narrated all of them.
Yeah, they were great.
I love doing those.
That's must conjure up a lot of memories just working on a script on something like that, I would think.
That was an interesting program. I think it played all over the world. I was once in Spain. This doesn't make any sense at all, does it? I was in Spain, and Diet came on the television in Spain and said, narrated by Joseph Cotton, and I never appeared, my picture never appeared, and some very nice Spanish gentleman did the narration.
That's showbiz. Well, Joseph Cotton, we're very happy to have had this chance to take our Those Were the Days microphones backstage to the Drury Lane, and we...
It's been a great pleasure. I'd like to say one thing that... I've never played in the round before. This is only our third performance, and I think it's about the Drury Lane. I think it's a beautiful theater. It's wonderfully run. Tony DeSantis has made it so comfortable here. I think it's marvelous that he's made it possible for people to come to a beautiful restaurant and do whatever they like. They can dine, drink, go to the theater, and at reasonable prices. The theater seems to have got so expensive now, and it's out of most people's reach. I know out in New York, I'm just horrified.
Oh, it's fantastic! Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and here he has really made a beautiful undertaking and a successful undertaking out of it, and I'm very proud to be here. Working for him, and it's an institution. It doesn't need any plugging from me, because I know you know what it is, and people from Chicago do. And I'm very happy to have been exposed to it myself.
Do you like running in and out of the aisles, up and down the aisles?
I haven't quite caught on to it yet, but
you'll just have to walk Virginia.
What does that mean?
Walk Virginia. You're quoted in Carol Carroll's book as telling him when he was rushing around Hollywood one day, you told him to walk Virginia.
Oh, that's a slow walk, yeah.
That's a slow walk, yeah, because you hail from Virginia.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, all of us from the Chicago area and Evanston hail Joseph Cotton and Patricia Medina out at the Drury Lane.
Very kind of you.
Thank you very much.